Bloomberg on the Economy with Mike McKee and Sarah Eisen.
The focus today on Greece with a little bit of a eye cocked at Portugal, depending on what happens in Greece. The news is the private sector creditors are back in Athens to meet with the Greek government over what kind of deal they can come up with to cut the amount of money that Greece owes. They're hoping to cut it by 50%. Reports are that they're going to have to do more than that to make the numbers work. Somebody who knows, Sasan Garmani of SGH Macro Advisors, he's been following this very closely. You have a note just out on the latest on this, and we want to get the latest details that you have about what's going on. But let me just start off by saying let's not beat around the bush. Is Greece going to default?
It looks like it. Yes, it looks like it. Even with a private sector initiative debt swap.
Doesn't look like there's any way out of it. Well, there's one way out, right? Germany could agree to pay a lot more money.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the issue here, Mike, is that both sides want to come to an agreement on the debt swap. So the issue isn't really there's been a lot of back and forth on the terms of the swap, what the coupon is going to be, so on and so forth. 50% haircut, that is pretty much set in stone. They're not going to deviate off the 50% haircut. But the way they're trying to get some more juice is, you know, negotiating over the terms of the new coupon and how low the rate they can give the new coupon. And so basically have an effective haircut that's deeper for the bondholders. So they're pretty close to agreement on that from what we understand, and I don't think that's really been the issue here. The issue here is what happens afterwards, and the issue is twofold. One is once you get that agreement between the IIF and Greece with the blessings of the IMF, what kind of participation do you get from the bondholders? And if you don't get 100% participation, they have to force other people to go along. So that is technically becomes a default at that point if they need to do that. And the second is that there's even if you get 100% participation, you still have a 15 to 30 billion euro hole that needs to be filled. It's not the end of the world, maybe, but you know,
somebody's got to come up. I mean, even Mitt Romney doesn't have that kind of money. let's take these things one at a time. First, the whole idea of the 50% haircut.
Right.
It's a nominal, notional 50% haircut.
Right.
But what the creditors are complaining about and what caused the talks to break off last week is this whole question about what you're going to pay in the coupon, which is the interest rate that you get paid on these bonds that you're holding. And from what we understand, Greece, pushed by Germany, essentially wants a coupon of 3% or less, maybe even 2%, and the creditors want one north of 5.
Yeah,
because basically, the lower the coupon goes over the life of the bond,
exactly,
it's more than a 50% haircut. They say 70 to 80%. You know, they're losing.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it wasn't just Germany. It's really the IMF is really behind the scenes, sort of. You know, they're not directly involved in the negotiation, but they're the elephant in the room, and they're looking at sustainability, and they're saying, look, this has got to be a really low coupon for this thing to actually even come close to working. So it's the IMF, Germany, you know, to some extent, but the IMF has been the big driver. I'm not, you know, there were talks of 2 or 3%. I don't think it's going to be that low. I think it's probably going to be somewhere, maybe in the somewhere between 3 to 4%, something like that. You still need to get some participation from the bondholders, but yeah, exactly. That's been the issue. So maybe you don't get a net present value of, you know, up to 80%, but what we've been, you know, hearing all along and what we've been expecting has been that you might end up somewhere in the high 60s to 70. And you know, there were some reports from somebody yesterday involved in negotiation who basically
68%. Yeah. 68%. So then the question becomes, if I'm holding these, but I mean, well, it gets complex because obviously if I'm a vulture investor and I came in and bought these bonds at 30 cents on the euro, you know, that's not a bad deal. But if I'm holding something that I bought at par and I'm looking forward to a 68% loss, and I've got protection on this, I've got credit default swaps, why do I go along? I don't, right?
And that's the issue, is that there are people whose interest it is at this point to try and trigger a CDS event and to hold out, because you're getting so close to what the effective market price is right now. You're looking at bonds that are trading in the, you know, in the 20s, and you're saying, okay, well, here's a deal that's maybe in the low 30s. So, yeah, it could be, you know, okay for people who bought them at these levels, but for a lot of people, they'll be taking a big hit on it, even if they've marked to market it already to some extent.
Now, the argument from the IMF, the EU, the ECB, and so on is that if you don't, if you go to that option, if you have people who are going to let the CDS be triggered, and Fitch Rating says if you don't get, if it goes over 50%, it's just going to be automatically considered a default, then you open up Pandora's box. We've never had a situation like that.
And you're seeing, and I think that's why, you know, despite some, you know, risk on trade in the markets, and markets do want to look beyond Greece, undoubtedly. That's been the case since, you know, the end of the year and the beginning of the year, beginning of this year. But if you look at a few canaries in the coal mine, if you look at Portugal, Portugal has been under a lot of strain. And Portugal is the next weak link right now in the system. It's small. It's not Spain. It's not Italy. Spain and Italy and these countries have been doing their funding. There's a lot of liquidity being pumped by the ECB. It's averting Armageddon. So that's all good and fine. But if you look at sort of, you know, a few flashing lights down the road, and if you look at the yields on Portuguese bonds, they're starting to creep back up. Ireland, which had been kind of a, you know, a darling of the markets, you know, after going through all the upheaval, is now coming under question again. And so that's really why, you know, the ECB said for the start, let's not open this Pandora's box at all. And there's a little bit of, you know, I told you so that's going on, but it's too late for that now. So they got to basically hunker down and get this thing done and try to, you know, ring fence. And this is where that whole IMF stuff comes in that you've been hearing about today. Try to ring fence the big boys at this point.
Yeah, as one analyst put it today, the sound of hammering you here is European officials trying to build firewalls right now because they know. And what's interesting is that we have gone from hearing these people say, this will never happen. Nobody will ever be nobody will be defaulting. That's a ridiculous question to ask to, yeah, well, there might be a default, so big deal. No, no worries. We've been talking about what's going on in Greece. The one aspect that we didn't get to was the other point that you made of what happens if you don't get the 100% take up, and you're not going to get that out of out of these bondholders. Then where does Greece go from there?
Yeah, well, the Greek government has threatened to put in a collective action clause, which basically, you know, requires other bondholders to go along with the majority that, to put it in retroactively. And their argument is saying is that basically we can they can impose this. They can put this collective action clause in. It's within their rights to do that. And what they're hoping is that they can do this and they can basically scare the other bondholders into joining without having to trigger these collective action clause. So you kind of hope to get the best of both worlds. You get everybody to participate and you don't have a credit event. Well, that's not going to happen. You know, that's kind of wishful thinking. So and I think the markets are maybe underestimating that a little bit. They think that they look at this official statement and say, oh, well, that seems like a good plan. It's a good plan, but, you know, as was it Mike Tyson said, it's all a good plan until I punch you in the face or something like that. You heard that?
If he didn't say that,
everybody
has
a plan until they get punched in the nose or something like that.
Speaking of getting punched in the nose, Portuguese bond yields are up very high today, 13.24. Yeah. And in fact, what we're seeing, I believe, is a euro-era record high for the Portuguese 10-year bond yield. Yeah. So investors have already moved on from Greece, huh?
Yeah, that's right. And as you know, as we were talking before, I think if you look at, you know, contagion for Greece and the ECB and everybody says this is unique and exceptional. Hey, it's not going to happen to anybody else. Well, the next weak link is Portugal. And that has been, you know, that has been under pressure, you know, for the last couple of weeks, really, as a result of what's happening in Greece, as well as, you know, the economic numbers and sort of missed budgets and Portugal specific issues. And then the next one is Ireland. Portugal is weaker than Ireland, and so it's you know under more serious attack. So, you know, there's good news out there, you know, for some of the big boys, you know, as far as liquidity, you know, for Spain and Italy and so on, as we said. And, you know, some of the numbers in the States have been better. But if you look at, you know, some of these weak links out there in Europe, I hate to, you know, I feel like the Grinch has stole Christmas, you know, but these things are still there, much as people really don't want to hear it.
Well, Greece is unique in the sense of even the IMF and others are saying, you know, Greece does not have a liquidity problem. Greece has a solvency problem. They're just bankrupt. Portugal's not bankrupt, and Portugal has something of a liquidity problem at the moment. But we're past that, aren't we? We're just at a point where investors are not differentiating.
Yeah, and you know, there's a question of risk appetite here, and you know, look, and everybody knows that there's a lot of issuance coming back to the markets, and to some extent, you know, you can get the ECB to step in and all that. But you know, the world has changed. You know, I mean, you've had a lot of the foreign buyers who are in buying European sovereign debt are not going to come back to the table next month, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 12 months from now. There's been a, you know, bad burning of, you know, of risk appetite there. And so I think, you know, to the extent that you can, you know, medicate some of these markets and so on, you're removing a big buyer, you know, out of the markets. And that's why, you know, even if you look at Italian, you know, long-term yields, you know, the short end has done really well because, you know, be pumping money and so you get the rollover, and you know, you don't expect Italy to default in 3 years. But as far as like real appetite to go out on the curve, it's not there. And so I think this kind of environment is going to stay with us for a while.
Until what? Until the European Central Bank steps it up? I mean, they've been doing things behind the scenes. It doesn't look like they are ready at all soon to be aggressively buying Italian and Spanish bonds.
No, they're not. And this is why, you know, some of the focus has turned back to the IMF, and maybe we can get the IMF to provide credit lines and so on and so forth. I don't know that any of these things is going to be the do-all and end-all. I think you do need to get past. I think there has to be a cleansing, you know, in the markets at some point. There has to be a price discovery and a cleansing that brings buyers back into the market. You know, real legitimate buyers back into the market. And that means resolution on Greece.
But hasn't that started a little bit after
it's gonna probably carry through until at least the first quarter of this year. Maybe by the first half of this year, we can start looking past these things. And then I think the other story is going to be, you know, as you know, Mike and I were talking about before, is oil. I think is going to be the other, you know, big story right now. These are the two big macro stories, you know, Europe and oil on the market that affect the markets.
And that is an interesting story because, as Sarah and I have talked about a lot on this program, the unreported story or the unfocused upon story. I'm sure there's lots of reporting out there that most people don't look at, but we've done a couple of shows on is oil and Iran and what is going on. And people say by the end of 2012, we're not going to be talking about Greece anymore. We'll be talking about Iran.
Yeah. And you know, people look at what's going on with Iran and with oil. And I think the markets, you know, like to look at things in a relatively black and white way, you know, sort of binary. Is this a big one? Is there going to be the military strike? You know, are there going to be sanctions? Or are there not going to be sanctions? And as far as, you know, having an imminent strike, you know, from Israel, you know, that's not happening. You know, these things are on a, you know, essentially a slow burn. So we don't see like, you know, big military disruption of that sort, you know, and the Israelis themselves and Ehud Barak has kind of, you know, pulled back from that a little bit today. But as far as the sanctions are concerned, you know, even though there is a phase in to the sanctions, what's happening in Iran is they're so nervous about this noose that's tightening on them that the Iranian government has every incentive in the world to keep oil prices as high as they possibly can. And that doesn't mean, yeah, hey, we block the Straits of Hormuz and we all, you know, shoot ourselves in the head. But there are other things that it can do in the meantime. There was something yesterday about, you know, planning, you know, attacks on, you know, U.S. assets in Turkey. There's a pipeline in the south of Iraq, which is, you know, very heavily fortified, where, you know, Iran has been building up its influence. The Saudis are on top security alert right now for their oil facilities. Very, very heavily guarded. It's not like Iran can go in there and blow up the Abqaiq, you know, refineries, which is the huge refinery that Turkey has, that the Saudis have. But all they need is to have, you know, even if it's a foiled, unsuccessful, there's just these headlines to keep this sort of threat of disruption out there. And the final part is that, you know, Saudis have promised to kind of make up for any loss of Iranian oil if, you know, countries cut back on their supply. And, you know, from what we understand, they're already producing a little bit more than they're reporting that they're producing, and so this kind of the slack that they have is probably a little less than what they're advertising.
So does this mean that oil prices are just on a one way ticket higher?
Yeah, I mean, it's a short, simple answer. I think we could have a situation where, you know, even if the global economy is slowing down, and some other commodities may not be going up necessarily. But because of these factors, I think that oil is going to at least continue to grind higher. And a lot of analysts kind of are jumping over each other. It's going to go to 140, 150, what? But even if you take 100 to 120, that's a 20% move. That's a lot right there. And I see that as very plausible. And that's enough to really have an impact on the economy, on various currencies. I know you like to follow currencies a lot.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Hey, got you.
Yeah, you got her. You're her. Yeah,
it's totally fucked up.
You had me at a crisis.
You had me at hello,
I think.
Yeah. Aside from the whoopie pie, that's her favorite subject.
So you're looking at commodity producing countries, I guess.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think the ruble has benefited a little bit already. And I wouldn't say, all commodity producing currencies, but, Canadian dollar, I think, if you're looking at a sort of, a modest U.S. recovery at the same time as some firm oil prices, that will be a strong beneficiary, the Canadian dollar. I wouldn't say necessarily that the Australian dollar, for example, would perform quite exactly the same way, because you have sort of the China factor, weighing down a little bit on that. So I think those are, the Canadian dollar, I think, is one of the currencies that we've been looking at, other than just, flat out oil.
Norway? Did you mention Norway?
Play it simple.
A lot of people like Norway these days.
So to wrap up in our last minute here, it sounds like at the end of 2012, the names may change, but the, upset stomach for the markets goes on. There's still going to be an overhang.
What a pleasant thought.
Well, you talk to any trader, and there's always upset stomachs.
The overhang. Put it that way.
The overhang is the overhang is there. We have never bought into sort of the Armageddon scenario, and I know there's some people who still think this ultimately ends up in a full breakup of the Eurozone and Germany leaving Europe or something crazy like that, and we don't see that happening. So I think some of those tail risks, in Europe maybe start to dissipate. But, this whole geopolitical issues and sort of what's happening with the oil markets. And in addition, you're doing that in an environment where the economy is on a relatively weak footing in its recovery. It's going to weigh on, at least limit the upside.
So. There you go. A cheerful outlook for 2012 from Sasan Garamani.
Listen to Bloomberg on the Economy weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.